You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the people and ideas behind your favorite online brands. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Eunice Bien, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
So you're the CEO and founder of Material. Material makes kitchenware, tools, knives and spatulas and those kinds of things. Tell me a little bit more about Material and where it began.
Yeah, absolutely. So Material has been, I think, really a labor of love for my co-founder, Dave, and I for well over 2 years. And I think a lot of it just stemmed from the fact that Dave and I, we've been friends for well over 10 years here in New York and have always been friends largely because I think we love food and we like to eat, but also because we've always been people obsessed with just good design. And I think for us, you know, both of us are Asian American and we grew up in these families where the kitchen was so vibrant, and we both had moms that really, I think, taught us good taste in every sense of the word. And so for us, you know, as we started to think about what was really lacking in the kitchenware space, were the things that inspired us growing up, and that was making sure that there were beautiful things that could bring you joy in your kitchen, that there was a sense of almost reverence and respect for the kitchen and knowing that you didn't need much to really get started and to fall in love with home cooking and what it was all about. As we started to dream up Material about 2 years ago, we started simply with the premise of, you know, how do we bring joy into this everyday tool that so many people use all across the world, whether it's knives or utensils? And how do we design something that feels and looks different than what's out there on the market? And so we started designing while we both had full-time jobs. So I was at Revlon at the time in the beauty industry, and Dave was at Chanel at the time. And we just started putting pen to paper nights and weekends, and really just started exploring kind of what would inspire us. And we were talking to friends and family and doing a lot of research on our own and poring over cookbooks that we had loved ourselves, and really just tried to understand, like, if we were to start all over again and build out our kitchens from scratch, where would we begin? What would that look like and what would it feel like? So it's been quite a journey for the last 2 years as we've been building out Material, and it's been very exciting to see how people have embraced this idea of form and function coming together in one's kitchen.
This is at the intersection of so many of my interests. I love to cook. My mom is an incredible cook. She went through Cordon Bleu in Paris and, like, has taught me everything I know about cooking. I went to school for industrial design. Obviously, you know, we're with Lumi very involved in, like, e-commerce and what you're doing. So this is, like, the overlap of everything that I love. When you started designing, as you were mentioning, what was the first thing that you started with?
Yeah, first of all, I love that your mom has inspired this love of cooking and food within you, because that's very, very true to kind of our own personal experiences as well. So I love to hear that. And if your mom wants to ever come see us, we'd be more than welcome to have her.
Yeah.
So we kind of started first, I think it was more conceptual. So instead of first starting with a tool, we said, what would that set of tools look like that we felt like we'd want to reach for every day and for every meal? And how do we start putting those elements together? And, you know, I think we started first with almost some of the core product kind of design values that we'd want to create within our line of products. And it started first with just tactile, right? So being able to pick up a tool and feel like it was super well balanced, that it didn't feel cold to touch. And that was something that we felt like a lot of existing tools on the market, just you pick them up and you almost, it felt so cool and you're creating something that's so rich that it just felt like there was a bit of conflict there. So what we wanted to do was say, how do we have that moment when someone is about to get ready to start cooking, they pick up their tools and they almost feel like they're just, like, ready to go because everything feels right. And so for us, that started with a study around some of the most kind of reached for tools And how do we connect that to meals that people are probably creating on a more regular basis? And so we said, you know, the knife is definitely a core tool that many people use on a daily basis. And we wanted to be thoughtful about just all the different ways that you might be able to look at your knife and almost bring you a sense of joy or satisfaction. So the way in which we added a little accent band that we can start to create different colorways with, or the way in which we kind of engraved our branding and our logo into the end of the handle, or just what's called the Hammond line, which is on the blade of the knife. So really fine detail that shows you that there are multiple layers to the knife. It's not just one layer of steel, but ours is made up of three layers of steel that we source directly from Japan. So we started to just take all these elements of better design, more kind of considered and intentional features, and wrap that with something that we felt like had just more warmth and more ultimately modernity to the tools from a visual and aesthetic perspective. And we tied that all together into what became our initial collection, which is called the Fundamentals. And that's really the base that we're building material off of.
Yeah, so you have in that, you mentioned a few of the different tools that are involved, but there's seven tools, or I guess six tools in the base, right?
Yes.
So that's the collection that launched just a few months ago in March. How's the response been so far?
Yeah, it's been great. And, you know, I will say one of the things that's most amazing when you're starting your business is just hearing directly from some of your early customers. And we would get customer service emails kind of day one saying, oh my God, like I love everything in this, everything's so well made, but God, these tongs, like they're genius or they're magical. And, you know, just as people start to almost describe their personal experience with our tools, and how they've transformed or encouraged them to do more cooking, I think that's the most rewarding part of it all. Because at the end of the day, I mean, yes, we're selling tools, and yes, they're beautiful tools, and yes, they're high quality and they perform well. But, you know, what we truly want to do is just instill and bring that sense of joy and wonderment and respect for the kitchen and for the home cook and really the things that people are creating in their own space. I don't know, folks saying like, I find more things to chop in a day because I love the knife so much. You know, those are the things I think that truly make this journey worth it.
How did you decide to broaden out from, you know, one or two tools to those six that you launched with? I think that, you know, when you're starting something, it's easier to start simple, but you guys started with a pretty big assortment of things.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say it was a lot to take on, to be super candid. And I think for us, what we wanted to do is really honor this idea of, hey, we can actually help make some sense of this category that can sometimes be super overwhelming to shop. And we felt like our response and our solution wouldn't be as valid or even that earth-shattering if we just introduced one knife or if we just introduced knives, period, right? Because there are companies that will sell you a knife. And for us, what we really wanted to do was say, you know, how do we break down this overwhelming process of determining what you need in your kitchen? And how do we start moving away from those 22-piece kitchenware sets where, you know, it has a pizza cutter and an ice cream scoop and all these things that ultimately you may not really need and they end up in your junk drawers. How do we start to tell a bit of a different story? And for us, that meant that we had to be, I think, a bit more ambitious on the product side and say, if we're going to win people in this space, they need to know that we are not just great knife makers. We're not just, you know, able to create this new form of a knife holder meets a utensil holder that we know people love, but we're able to also create a pair of tongs or spatula or spoons that ultimately are, you know, hopefully better than what you have in your kitchen. And that's something that doesn't really exist in the kitchenware space today. I mean, so many brands I feel like are more focused on one category versus another. And for us, like when you're cooking, you're not thinking in categories. You're not thinking about it like the buyers of these retail retailers that are, you know, maybe buying for cutlery or buying for tools and accessories. You're thinking like, okay, here's what I want to cook and here's what I need to do to prep, and you start going through the motions. And so we just felt like it was really important for us to be able to capture kind of that entire process and really convince people that, you know, you should have great everyday tools. And the only way for us to do that was to definitely aim high and bring, you know, 6 tools and a completely new kind of holder for all these tools to market.
Yeah, I definitely would consider myself like a nerd for kitchen tools, but I follow the Alton Brown philosophy, which is like you want to have multitaskers. You want to have a subset of things that can do a lot of things. And I think that the ones you've picked out make a lot of sense in that respect, like starting with the chef's knife and paring knife. Like those two are probably the most important things that you can get. So like the assortment makes total sense to me. What I'm wondering is, you know, when you're jumping into these different categories, some of the things like the knives in particular are a very storied category. The companies that come to mind in this area, are some of them are like 400 years old or something, from, you know, Japan or Germany. How do you go about jumping into this market where I think a lot of the marketing around it has to do with that heritage, and you're this brand new company? How do you set yourself apart in that world?
I think for us, it's a matter of telling a new version to so many of those old stories, right? So, you know, you've got all these amazing, maybe rich Japanese knife brands, or like you mentioned, you know, in the German space, I mean, there are brands that have been around for a while. And I think for us, what we really felt like would be an evolution on those stories is just bringing it into the modern day light. And instead of really focusing on families or these companies that have been making knives for so long, and ultimately they're producing it, quite honestly, in a lot of the same places that we're producing our products, but putting a little bit of a different spin on it from a marketing perspective, we said, you know, it's less about the brand and the company's story, and it's more ultimately for us and our vision about the people who hold and wield these knives and the tools. You know, one of the ways in which we're starting to tell that story is in a couple of weeks, we're launching our first content series, and it's called That One Dish. And it's this whole idea of all these people of all walks of life, some that are professional chefs, some that aren't, some that are amazing jewelry designers, some that are in the financial world. They're all kind of united by this love and passion for cooking. And they invite you into their home, and they share kind of with you some of the things that have inspired them on this cooking journey. Those types of stories, and being able to not be so inwardly focused, but ultimately be able to create a platform and a community for people to share their stories. I mean, that's really, really important to us. And I think that's the new modern day approach to brands and to storytelling, which is really inviting your customers to be a part of that story with you. And so many of these kind of heritage brands, I think, are always looking kind of inward and using time as a real testament to their kind of story. And that's fine. But at the end of the day, I mean, I feel like we want to bring and usher in kind of this new era for that home cook who may not feel as connected to some of these stories of, you know, decades and decades of one family creating one knife, right? So that's kind of the way that we've carved out our space, and that we know is really resonating with some of our early customers.
Yeah, I think it's always super intimidating, even if you're someone who is, you know, more advanced as a cook, to look at the aisles and aisles, or like if you're shopping online, that, you know, thousands of different styles of knives and things like that. And you've done a really good job of simplifying it. When I put my industrial designer hat on and I look at your product line, I see a lot of different materials and manufacturing processes. Obviously, you're, you know, using a lot of steel and wood. What was it like getting into that aspect of things? Like, for instance, with the tongs, like figuring out how to actually get that product produced? How did you go about figuring that out?
Yeah. So we've been very fortunate to have established some great relationships with folks in the kitchenware industry who have deep kind of manufacturing experience and knowledge. And so we've been able to lean on some of these advisors that have helped us navigate through kind of the whole supply chain process as we've been trying to bring our designs to life. But I think for us, I mean, I think it's pretty much been similar to a lot of other companies where, you know, you're constantly taking your own products out for kind of a test drive on your own and making sure that the feel of the materials are what you envision them to be. That some of the fine details that we've designed into them are coming through in the way that you had imagined them to be. And so for us, you know, we've had a lot of sampling and being able to actually, you know, cut with the knives and beat them up in the way that you might beat up just your everyday tools. We weren't precious about it. We didn't want it to be where, you know, you had to handle it with such care. We really wanted to mimic what it would be like if our customers had them in their own homes. And so that just took a lot of trial and error and literally obsessing over one mm here and there and trying to figure out what we wanted to have adjusted so that, you know, for the tongs, for example, which you mentioned, that there was a smoothness to the way that it could lock, or that, you know, we really wanted to make sure that that one piece, because it is all stainless steel, had like a beautiful fluidity to the design. And even the way in which the head of the tongs slope up so that it doesn't actually, you know, dirty your kitchen counter or anything like that. We wanted that line to feel, you know, as kind of beautiful and organic and natural as possible. So a lot of that just came down to us, you know, creating as many samples as we could and sharing them with friends and family who could take them for a little bit of a, you know, test drive themselves, and then us using them in the kitchen and just making sure that all those elements were coming together in the way in which that we had kind of envisioned.
You mentioned advisors and manufacturing partners who helped you. How did you go about finding those people?
So we, you know, early on before we had officially gotten material started, had gone to different trade shows and just started talking to people. And I think one of the most amazing things about the world of startups, especially in New York right now, is there's just so much openness and transparency and a willingness to connect you with different people. So, you know, whether it was us going to trade shows and meeting some of our sourcing partners and connecting with them, and ultimately them truly understanding like what it is that we were trying to do differently and how we were going to push on some of their beliefs on what, you know, beautiful kitchenware could and should look like, all the way down to advisors and partners on the kind of investing and financing side. We've been very fortunate to have had a lot of people open up their networks. And I think ultimately it came down to people understanding what it is that we're trying to build and just wanting to help and support us in any which way. So yeah, we've been very much the lucky recipients of, you know, people connecting us and helping foster just some relationships with us that have really paid off.
You mentioned your background at Revlon. Can you share a little bit about what you were doing there and how that has translated into what you're doing at Material?
You know, the beauty industry, I'd say, is kind of an incredible space to explore, especially these past few years. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that you have these big incumbent brands that have been around for decades, very similar to, in some regards, the kitchenware space. And then you have all these digitally native brands that are like the David to the big Goliaths that exist in this industry. And what you saw happen pretty quickly was that people wanted, or and even in some instances, I think really demanded more from brands. You couldn't just put out cool products and stack them high and kind of let them fly. Brands really had to stand for something to resonate with this customer that wanted to connect with your values and your mission. And I think because real connection takes time, a lot of these big beauty companies would start to acquire the smaller brands as their solution, as their way to connect with more people. And so I think what was interesting about this experience coming from the beauty industry and then translating that into material has just been the emphasis on what a brand should stand for and what it should mean. And that was really important when Dave and I first started to build out material. And, you know, we were trying to figure out what that North Star would be and something that would guide us from day one. And, you know, we knew right off the bat that we didn't want to be a startup that tried to be, like, I feel like everyone uses the, like, Warby Parker of the kitchen or like the Casper of the kitchen. And, you know, ultimately we wanted to create something that didn't look like anyone else. And that kind of pushed this category of kitchenware out of this conundrum that we kind of felt like existed, which is, you know, the good looking stuff is really expensive. And then most of the affordable stuff isn't so good looking. So we wanted to create products that made you feel good when you held them in your hands, and a brand that wasn't just talking about, you know, cutting out the middleman, but really a brand that wants to connect people more deeply to their kitchen and their tools and other people that love cooking like we do. And so we wanted to create this brand that people could actually be inspired by and inspire us. And a lot of that really stemmed from just some of the dynamics and the things that I saw happening in the beauty space. Because in some regards, I mean, it is, I think, just such an evolved category and industry over the past 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And it seems like, you know, you mentioned there's a Warby Parker of everything nowadays. And so that aspect is almost becoming expected, I think. It can't really be the main way that you communicate your story anymore. I think, yeah, it was for a while, that just the basic idea that there was this business model. But, you know, part of it that you are talking about when someone browses your website is the value proposition of, you know, you make comparisons to what this would cost, mm-hmm, elsewhere. The value of what you're providing seems like an important part. How do you balance that with helping people understand the level of quality that you're bringing? Is it just through the photography or the copy? How do you try to, like, balance those two things?
I think we define value in multiple ways, right? So value from a pricing perspective very much aligns with what you said, which is, you know, our set, which is called the fundamentals. You know, if you were to buy all those things on their own, it would be about $360. We sell it for $175, and that includes free shipping and, you know, 60-day trial and a lifetime guarantee. So yes, we absolutely do feel like the pricing component is a slice of the story that we have to tell as it relates to value. But value is so much more. And I think this is one of the things that we love about how customers have been pushing and asking brands for more and more and more, right? So from our perspective, we see value as creating a lot more just functionality within each of our tools. So really taking this considered design and making sure that you're going to get great value from it because you're going to be using it often, like every day, and that you don't need to have as many tools because these set of tools can do a lot of heavy lifting for you. So our metal spoon, yes, it's a beautiful stainless steel spoon, and it's you know, great to stir sauces with or to serve with, but we designed it so that the liquid content of the head of the spoon holds exactly a quarter cup of liquid, right? So instead of having to pull down your measuring cup and dirty that up, you just know that 4 scoops of the spoon is going to equal about a cup. And so for us, being able to create more value points in just the design themselves so that it wasn't just about, hey, I can get this that much cheaper because I'm going direct. You know, we wanted to even take that aspiration of value and, like, broaden it and do more with it by creating more multifunctional tools, by being more considerate about usage and how frequently you're going to be utilizing these items. And then ultimately, you know, I think there's a lot of emotional value to having something that feels a little bit more like the things that you like. And so many people invest in their kitchens from a design perspective, and they're investing in all these things to beautify their homes. And so why shouldn't their tools that they're cooking with on a daily basis be more beautiful? And why shouldn't they be more reflective of the things that you like and the tastes and the designs that you naturally gravitate towards. So I think we really took value as a very multidimensional thing that we could deliver to our customers in a multitude of ways.
You know, I moved to the U.S. when I was 17. I lived in France before that. So when I moved to the U.S. in 2003, I think that was sort of the beginning of the foodie movement. And we've seen over the past 15 to 20 years a huge shift in how people in the U.S. think about food and how their relationship to cooking. What have you seen just on a personal level in that evolution and how that affects maybe people's purchasing decisions around these types of products?
Yeah. We went through a period of people idolizing these, you know, chefs, right? So the Food Network was particularly coming to the forefront of just culture in general, and people aspiring to be like the Bobby Flays or the Giottas of the world, right? And there was almost a sense of perfectionism or precision that I think really existed in the food world. And I think where we started to see things evolve, and by we, I even just mean like friends and family and the things that I saw happening around us, was that some of the preciousness got taken away from, you know, having to create these perfect dishes or figuring out how to plate things so that it looked like it was from a restaurant. But like, it was almost like food became a conduit for community to happen. And we always joke about this in the office that like some of it is cultural, and then some of it is like as you're just going through different life stages. So, you know, you're in your mid-20s and you start going out a little bit less and your friends start coming over a bit more and someone brings a bottle of wine and, you know, maybe you put together a cheese plate and then that starts to evolve into, you know, maybe creating a couple of appetizers for people to try. And you know, you're not doing this real formal type of entertaining, but ultimately food is kind of bringing the people that you want to spend time with together, and you're sharing in this meal, and it doesn't have to feel so formal like you're sitting down and you don't have to have this really pre-planned menu and a whole tablescape, but you can be a lot more kind of relaxed about having people over and what that means. And so I think as we started to see this happening around us, you know, again, with friends and family and even going through it ourselves, I think it's been a really cool evolution and something that creates just greater accessibility to wanting to cook at home and wanting to have your friends over. And, you know, sometimes maybe you're ordering a main dish, but then you're cooking and creating all the appetizers or the desserts or mixing up your own cocktails that might go with that particular dish that you bought. And that's all cool and that's all amazing. And I think that's been something really special to see. And I think that's why you have so many people sharing on Instagram or, you know, people creating just YouTube videos around things that they've learned and acquired and developed kind of in their kitchens on their own without having to look at all these professionally and classically trained people that are teaching them what to do. It's a really unique time, I think, to be a part of this particular industry and really to see how people are engaging and interacting with food.
Yeah, the whole Instagramification of how restaurants work has been pretty fascinating to watch. I don't think I expected to see that. What I've noticed over the past 15, 20 years is that people care so much more about the origin of the products that they're buying, the flavors and the complexity of different tastes and flavors and aromas that can exist in all kinds of different ingredients. Seems like at the highest point that it's ever been in America. And I'm just curious where it goes from here. Where do you hope that it goes from here?
Yeah, I mean, I just hope that more and more people continue to go down this journey and ask the questions and get to know some of the local food purveyors and quite honestly start extending and expanding into different cuisines and not just feel like they have to cook Italian, or, you know, they're sticking to American cuisines, but, you know, venturing into Korean food, which is something that I love to cook, or, you know, Persian food, or, you know, really expanding their awareness of different flavor profiles. You know, one of my favorite cookbooks that kind of came out in this past year is called Salt, Fat, Acid and Heat by Samin Nosrat. And I think what I love about it in particular is it's really teaching you how to build and manipulate flavors and layer in all these different elements to what it is that you cook, so that you're not just cooking solely by recipes and feeling like you have to be perfect in your approach, but really understanding, you know, the importance that salt plays in each of the dishes, or how you can build and incorporate fat and what that can do to deepen the flavors in dishes. So what I would love to see is just people being able to maybe feel less constrained by even cooking some of these recipes, and just almost have a bit more confidence in just the cooking experience and process. And, you know, one of the greatest things from this book is even like, how do you fix a broken mayonnaise, right? So if you're going to make mayonnaise on your own, like inevitably you've probably messed it up at some point. And instead of feeling like it's a failure, like how do you actually go through and fix that and, you know, learn from that and understand what you need to do differently in order to kind of right that particular wrong at that time. So that's what I'm most excited about. And that's where I really hope to see people go, is to continue to experiment and, you know, extend beyond just the things that they think they know in the kitchen, and be willing to try more and ask those questions and figure out what's in season, cook what's in season, all those amazing things that I think so many people have started to pave the way for.
What got you into food in the first place? Was it just through your family or something else?
For sure. I mean, I really do credit my love of food in the kitchen very much to my family. And my father has been a small business owner my entire life. And one of his businesses was actually a Chinese food restaurant. So I was born in Kansas, of all places, which is not where you'd find, I think, a lot of Korean American families in the early 80s. And he saw it as an opportunity to bring Chinese food, even though we're not Chinese, into this town in Kansas where I was born. And when we moved to California, he opened up another Chinese food restaurant in San Diego. You know, I remember spending my weekends growing up at the restaurant, pretending to take people's orders and ringing the bell and seeing my dad, you know, cooking with a really fiery hot wok and just smelling all the amazing smells that were coming out of the kitchen. So I feel like I've always been surrounded by that, by virtue of the fact that, you know, my dad had his own restaurant. And then my mom, like I said earlier, I mean, she's an incredible cook. And now that I have my own daughter, I mean, it's so amazing to see my mom come visit us in New York and sit down and make homemade dumplings with myself and my three-year-old daughter, and pass along some of those family traditions that we had growing up. And all of it tastes so amazing that you can't help but kind of gobble it down. And I think that really developed for me not only my love of flavors and trying different things and tasting different spices and whatnot, but ultimately just this idea of how cooking brings people together, because I very much saw that in my own family growing up.
What are the traditions that you're bringing into Material, whether they're food related or not?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think it's something that we're going to explore as we develop some additional new tools that we're expanding and that will allow you to build upon the fundamentals. So, you know, there are a lot of tools that we talk about that you use in some Asian kitchens that haven't necessarily made their way into most Western kitchens. So maybe it's like a spider, but really figuring out how to interpret that and really make it feel relevant for Material and for our brand and for our product design and vision. But we definitely have some things planned that I think are nods to more global kitchens. And as people try and experience different types of cuisines in their own home kitchens, really making sure that they're using the best tools from around the world in order to be able to do so and cook that stuff. So yeah, stay tuned. There's some cool things we have coming that are in the works right now.
You also mentioned your co-founder, Dave. You've been working together for the past couple of years. Do you remember how you met and what inspired you to start this together?
So I learned this as we started to tell more people about Material and the company and tell people about our story. But Dave shared with me that I was actually his first friend in New York. So this was about 12 years ago. And we had just met through a mutual friend of ours. And like I shared earlier, I mean, we just instantly connected, I think, because we started talking about food and all these new restaurants that we were trying. He was working at Valentino at the time, and I was just talking to him about how much I love, you know, fashion and design. So I think our friendship happened very kind of organically because we are interested in similar things. And, you know, we've really been able to see each other grow over the past, you know, decade that we've known each other. And so, you know, he was at my wedding. I know his brother. I know his sister-in-law. He knows my sister. I mean, I'd say that we've just gotten to know each other so well over the course of just life in New York. And then I think when we knew that we wanted to embark on this venture together, it was, again, very natural. Like, we were sitting down having dinner at Russ and Daughters. Of course, we were, you know, sharing in a meal over amazing food. And I think for us, we had just started talking about some of the ideas that we had and how we wanted to do something different in this space that we love and hold so dearly to our own hearts. But we really wanted to make sure that we had a clear kind of reason for being. And as we started to ideate just, you know, over a meal together, that's where we started coming up with the different elements of Material and how important form meets function was going to be, how important kind of curation and editing and helping people kind of demystify what they need in their kitchens. We are very much inspired by Marie Kondo and kind of the whole KonMari method of, like, how do you bring joy to people in everyday objects and items? Yeah, it was over that one meal that we had just, I think the light bulb for us went off, which was like, we share just a lot of similar values. And we were dreaming a very similar dream. And we knew that we would want to do it together. Because, you know, leading and being a founder of a company can be super lonely. And, you know, being able to have someone that you inherently trust and just have such a great relationship and rapport with, that was just so critical to us. So it was important that we did it together and not individually or on our own.
Yeah. It's a question that comes up, I think, a lot for people who are starting something new. It's like, how do I find a co-founder? And, you know, my experience having worked with Jesse on two different companies for the past 8 years is that, you know, the person who makes a good co-founder is probably someone you've already known for a while. It's someone that you already know. You just need to, like, reach out or realize that maybe they're looking for something new as well. That's sort of a counterintuitive thing that people don't always expect, but it's also maybe frustrating if you don't have that person in your life yet.
For sure. And, you know, and I think are there people who, you know, meet strangers that ultimately become their co-founders? Absolutely. And I think there's so many different combinations of what makes co-founders successful. And I think the one thing that we knew that would help us as we started embarking on this journey together was we have very, very complementary skill sets. And I always say that I'm the yin to his yang because we, you know, have different backgrounds. And even though I think there are a lot of shared things that we both love, you know, the things that Dave does really well and likes to do on a daily basis are things that I'm like, oh my God, please don't make me do that, right? And vice versa. And I think finding a partner that truly complements you and doesn't just yes you or, you know, isn't always of just the same mind, I think that's really critical because it truly is like a marriage and then some, right? Because you will see each other in the highest highs and the lowest lows as you're trying to, you know, successfully launch a company. And just knowing that I have a co-founder who is just so good at things that I'm so bad at, like, that's a match made in heaven in my mind. And I think it's really also helped us own and lead different parts of the company and feel a sense of ownership in what it is that we're doing and what it is that we're ultimately bringing to the table on a daily basis.
Awesome. Well, congratulations again on the launch. I'm really excited to see, you know, how it goes, and we'll have to check in a few months or a year and see how you're doing, what you've learned since then. But if people want to find out more about Material, they could go to materialkitchen.com, get themselves a knife or a set of the fundamentals. Is there anything else that we should send people to?
No, I mean, just check us out at Material Kitchen, follow us on Instagram, email us, let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from everyone.
That's awesome. And if people want to find out more about you, are you on Twitter or any of those places?
I'm on Instagram, so it's just Eunice HBN, and you'll see a lot of really cute pictures of my daughter. So you'll definitely get a peek into my personal life. But no, I'm happy to be connected with people on whatever platform.
Well, thank you so much. And we'll put some links in the show notes and make sure that people get a peek into your life and you and your daughter.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review, could be just a sentence long, by going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.